got this?
Yeah.
I believe that the title for this year, I don't know how it was placed on the posters that I sent, was "Is Lifnim Ashuras HaDin Actionable?" That seems to be a contradiction in terms. When we speak of Lifnim Ashuras HaDin, usually means beyond the letter of the law. Al pi din, I'm required to do X. But there is Lifnim Ashuras HaDin. So the notion that Lifnim Ashuras HaDin could be actionable, which means that a court could enforce it, seems to be a contradiction in terms. If it can be enforced by a court, it's not Lifnim Ashuras HaDin, it's din. We'll come to that. The Ramban, in a somewhat well-known passage in Parshas Va'eschanan, speaks about the pasuk, a very famous pasuk, Asisa Hayashar Vatov Bnei Hashem. It's the first source on the sheet. And the Ramban there comments, L'rabosenu bazeh midrash yofeh. Chazal, after talking about what he thinks is pshat, Ramban then says that Chazal have a beautiful medrash on this topic. Omru zo pshara v'lifnim ashuras hadin. It refers to two things. Number one is the concept of pshara, which I will return to later. Pshara, literally, the way it's used today, means compromise. And lifnim ashuras hadin, which we have to talk about, what does that mean? V'hakavara bazed, Ramban says, the intent is kimitchila amar shetishmar chukosa veidosav asher tziva. The first thing that the Torah tells you is you have to observe the laws that you're actually commanded to do. And then, ve'ata yomar, now, the Torah says, gam basher lo tzivach, tein dat chalasa satov hayashar veinav, ki hu ohev hatov hayashar. So even on those things that we were not commanded, so nonetheless, the Torah says, you should try to do those as well. And the Ramban explains, he says, v'zeh inyan gadol. This is a major issue. The Torah cannot spell out every single detail of the way you're supposed to behave in your interactions with other people. It's just not possible. Once the Torah mentions many of the principles, Kegon lo selech, rochil, lo sikon, velo sita, velo samal, dam reacha, lo sikal al cheresh, b'nei seva talkum, v'chayot zibahem. All of these basic principles which are contained in Parshas Kedoshim. Chozer lomar b'derech klal, sheyasa tove yashar b'chol davar. The Torah speaks in general terms that you should attempt to do hatova yashar in every matter. Ashi kones b'zeh, until it is included in this idea, hapshara of the lifnim ashuras hadin. Okay, so the Ramban here has this notion that the Torah does not spell out everything, but in effect you're supposed to fill in between the lines. We might term this as there's a letter of the law, and then there may be a spirit of the law as well. It might have occurred to you that this very much parallel to another notion the Ramban has, perhaps even more famous than his comments here, and those are the Ramban's comments on the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. The Ramban's concept of Kedoshim to you is Kadesh Asmacha B'Mutar Lach. The Torah prohibits only certain kinds of food, certain kinds of drinks, certain kinds of behavior in the sexual realm, all the areas of physical pleasure. And yet, even though some things are mutar, nonetheless the Torah says Kadesh Asmacha B'Mutar Lach. Even those things that are permitted, nonetheless you should exercise restraint. In effect, Kedoshim Tiyu and Vasisa Yashar Vatov are analogs to one another. One is in the area of mitzvah shemin adam lamakom, and one is in the area of mitzvah shemin adam lachaveira. Now, lest one think that lifnim ashuras hadin is just this very lofty ideal, you know, it's nice to aspire to, but it's a little bit like icing on the cake. Din is like the main course. Lifnim ashuras hadin is the dessert. So there's a very, very striking gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia, it's the second source. The Gemara there comments on the words Asher Ya'asun, which was part of Moshe Rabbeinu's, Yisro's advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'odata lahem esaderach Asher Ya'ubba v'asam aser Asher Ya'asun. What is Asher Ya'asun? Zol lefnim ashuras hadin. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, L'chorva Yerushalayim ela al shadaru badin Torah. So the initial statement of Rabbi Yochanan, as it's quoted, is that the only reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed was because they judged Din Torah. That seems like an awfully strange statement. The Gemara says, Ela dine de megista lidainu? What, do they want to have untrained arbitrators, people who don't know what they're doing? That's, what else would you expect them to do? If you learn Tanakh, if you learn the first parak of Yeshaya, we read it as the Haftarah Chazon. So the reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed was precisely because they didn't engage in din. So here Rabbi Yochanan says, Lo harba Yerushalayim, ela al shadanu ba'din Torah. So the Gemara says, no. Ela emo she'ema, shehamidu dineim al din Torah v'lo avdu l'fnei mishuras hadin. The reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed was because they insisted upon din, and nobody was willing to go l'fnei mishuras hadin. So it's really an astounding statement, because if in fact l'fnei mishuras hadin is really beyond the letter of the law, it's supererogatory, nonetheless, Yerushalayim was destroyed because of that. And at some point, I would like to return to that. But the central question I want to focus on is, how to define l'fnei mishuras hadin? It's a very, very nice idea. It's the same question of kedoshim tiyu. The Ramban says that if you eat kosher food and what you drink is kosher, you could stuff yourself like a glutton. That's what you could do. You could eat and drink all day and make brachos before you, make brachos afterwards, and you haven't violated anything. And nonetheless, it violates kedoshim tiyu. Now, of course, you can ask the question, so what is the line? You can ask the very same question there. What is the line? Is 3 pieces of kugel too much? 7 pieces of kugel too much? You know, how much do you eat at a shul kiddush? What's the line? I'm not interested in addressing kedoshim to you, but I am interested in talking about what is the definition of l'fnei mishuras hadin. So, to try to get a picture of that, there are a number of passages in the Gemara where the concept of l'fnei mishuras hadin is invoked. The first example is a Gemara Bava Metzia. It's the first source under Roman numeral 2. It states as follows: Rabbi Yehuda v'shaka v'azar basrei demar shmua v'shukra d'bei daisa. Rabbi Yehuda was following his Rebbe Shmuel in a certain shuk, in a certain marketplace. So he was a little bit of a nudnik. So Amar Lei, he's following Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shmuel says, Matzakan arnaki mahu. If I find a purse right here, what's it did? Do I have to return it or not? Meaning, do we assume that it was Yeush that the owner gave up hope or not? So he kept asking, it's like the old Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now? You know, there's different places. So Rabbi Yehuda is bothering Shmuel. So Shmuel responds and says, if you find it here, it's yours. Meaning, it's Hefker. You don't have to return this object. Then he asks him the following. Boy Yisrael v'nasan bas simen mahu. Let's say another Jew comes along, gives you a simen, and says, this is my purse. So, Amar lei chayev l'hachzir. You have to return it. So Rav Yehuda says immediately, tartei. Two, meaning these two don't fit together. If I have to return it when someone comes forward and identifies it, then I wasn't allowed to keep it in the first place. If I'm allowed to keep it in the first place, if you come forward, I can say, sorry, you lost it in a place where we assume Yeush, finders, keys, squirrels, losers, weepers, have a nice day. So you can't adopt both of these halachic positions. So how can you tell me that I can keep it, but then if a Jew comes forward, I don't have to do hachraz, I don't have to announce it, but if someone comes to me and says, I lost the purse, and it looked just like this, my wallet had the following markings on it, and I pull it out, it's like, yeah, I have to return it. Chayiv l'hachzir. Amar lei l'fnei mishuras hadin. Shmuel said to him, no. When I told you chayiv l'hachzir, it meant l'fnei mishuras hadin. Al pidid, you don't have to return it. But l'fnei mishuras hadin, chayiv l'hachzir. And the Gemara quotes a similar story that Shmuel's father returned an aveda when he didn't have to. There is something strange, a little bit strange, about Shmuel's response, about the formulation of his response. What's odd about it? Anybody notice what is strange? Yes?
Why would he say chayiv l'hachzir?
The word chayiv is a very strange choice of words. Chayiv l'hachzir means you must return it. And yet in the same a sentence later, Shmuel says that's called l'fnei mishuras hadin. If it's l'fnei mishuras hadin, how can it be that it's chayiv l'hachzir? He might say, Tov lahachzir, Noy lahachzir, Misha machzir, Yavo ala bracha, but Chayiv lahachzir, which already sort of highlights this tension that on the one hand, it's Lefnei Meshurat Hadin, on the other hand, he speaks in terms of obligation. Okay. Now, if I had to ask you, before looking at the next example, if this were the definition of Lefnei Meshurat Hadin, how would you, what would the sort of contours of Lefnei Meshurat Hadin be? What would be the concept or principle? All right, let me wait one second. Let's read one more Gemara. We'll get to read a few more Gemaras, but let's take one more Gemara here. Okay, I'm going to skip one for the moment. We may not have time to do all of them. Let's skip to the page two, the Gemara Bamitzia Daf Lamed Amud Beis, because it's a great, besides being an important Gemara, it's a great story too. Gemara says the following: Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yosei had a ka'azel ba'urcha. Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yosei was walking in the way. Paga be'ahu gavra, the havadari patcha da'ofe. That person, you'll forgive this unseen translation, there's a word there that today would be considered a slur, but it actually just means a bundle of wood. That's its original meaning. So this guy was carrying a bundle of wood. Paga be'ahu gavra, v'kamispach. And the guy was like, he was exhausted, he had to take a rest. Amarle, he asked Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei, validly, would you help me lift the burden back up? So this is the mitzvah prika, a mitzvah tino prika, helping someone unload and reload a burden. Amarle kama shavin. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei says to him, how much is the bundle of twigs worth? Amarle palga dezuza. He said it's worth $0.50. Now, yoyle palga dezuza v'afkari. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei says the following: it's not worth my time and my effort. Here's $0.50. I just bought the bundle from you. And it's mine now. Have a nice day. Go on your way. Of course, what does Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei do with this wood? The Gemara says, va'afkare. And he's mafkar, because he doesn't want it either. He doesn't want to carry it. The part that I left out, because it's not relevant to our sugi, but it's such a great story. What does this wise guy do? The guy who's carrying the burden. Now that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei is mafkar, he goes, takes it again, is Zochen, and says, okay, can you help me load up my burden? So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei pulls out another $0.50, buys from him again. This time he says, it's hefker for everybody except for you. Okay? Now, the Gemara asks the following question. Why did Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei have to help him in the first place? He was an older person, he was a Talmud Chacham, and as a general rule, there are certain mitzvah, most mitzvahs ben Adam al-Chaveiro, we say that your kavod takes precedence over somebody else. Rav Shechter once commented as a Ramban, who says that all mitzvahs ben Adam al-Chaveiro are predicated on v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. But the rule is, in v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, is chayecha v'chayecha v'recha chayecha kodmin. Your needs always take precedence. Your life, your financial needs also take place over someone else's. I don't have to return your lost object. It's going to cost me money in doing so. So my interests take precedence over yours. So in this case, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei was a zakeh man with chvodo. Probably, if it was his own bundle of wood, it would be pasnish for him to pick it up. He would just leave it there. So he's not obligated to help this guy either. So why in the first place? Did he feel the need to help this person? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei, the Lefnei Meshurat Hadin da'amad. You're right, he didn't. But he was doing the Lefnei Meshurat Hadin. Okay, so now I've given two examples. Does anybody want to sort of perhaps take a stab at what the definition of the Meshurat Hadin is? Yes.
It seems that it's something that you aren't required to do it, but you choose to do it anyway.
Okay, but that's the definition by something. By definition, if it's not din, you're not required to do it.
Yeah, you're not required to do it, but you choose it.
Okay,
anyway.
but that's still not, in other words, that could be lots of things, right? You know, somebody could, burn my house down in fire, and I'm entitled to collect payment from him. Okay. But that doesn't mean, and we say, I should be mochel on the house. And let's say I'm very wealthy, and this guy deliberately burns my house down. Would you say, I'm a wealthy guy, I shouldn't charge him for it? You could make such an argument, but I don't think that would be so. So there's something, I think, more going on here. Yes?
Maybe that, like, someone would say something bad about you, like, what should
I mean, I think that you wouldn't classify that under the category of the Fin Mishra Sadin. You might categorize that under what we call V'yisen Mekiyem Hashem Yisrael, the obligation to peer even above suspicion. So that might be a personal consideration, but somehow there should be a connection between the Fin Mishra Sadin and Din, yeah?
Maybe it's just a bein and a machaber that you generally be obligated in, but in this specific case, you're not obligated in. So
I think that's very good. That's very close to the way I would define it. I would modify it slightly. Whenever there's a principle operating in halacha, bein adam machavero, but for some technical reason, it doesn't apply under these circumstances, then the Fin Mishra Sadin says, but even though technically it doesn't apply to you, to your situation, you should do it anyway. In principle, if someone loses an object, you're supposed to return it to them. Now, there are all sorts of halachas around that. If the object doesn't have a... Now, the problem, of course, is the following. If I find the water bottle in the middle of Lexington Avenue, like, good luck figuring out who this object belongs to. Right? So the Torah says it has to be an object which has a synonym. Why? Because otherwise, it's, you know, we're trying to draw a balance between, on the one hand, the desire to return lost objects to their owners. On the other hand, you can't impose an absurd burden on the person, on the motze, on the person who finds the lost object. So the Torah says like this, if there's a siman in it, and it fell in a place where the siman is not likely to get destroyed, then you're chayav l'hachmas. What happens if it's in a place where the siman would have gotten trampled on, and the person finds out about it, they're going to give up, as soon as they know, they're going to give up hope of getting it back. So then the Torah says, you don't have to chase down the person. What happens if it just falls into your lap? I found this object, as reviewed by Shmuel, I found the Arnav key here, the purse here. Do you have to return it? The answer is no. But what if some poor Shlomazo comes here and says, you know, I lost the purse like this, and it's like, okay, so in principle, you're really supposed to return it. So you don't know Machoyev too, but that's the Fin Mishra Sadin. Or Mishra Rabbi Yosef, you're supposed to help someone do pre-katina. In this case, he was exempt because it came at a greater cost to him. But in principle, it's the right thing to do. So Mishra Rabbi Yosef was technically exempt, but he did it anyway. A third example, I'm not going to read the story inside, but it relates to a concept called Dina de Garmei. It's a very important concept in the laws of Nezikin. Normally, in order for me to be liable for damages, I have to physically, actively destroy your property. What if I cause you a loss, but I don't do it directly? The Gemara's example was where a woman came to Rav Chiya and showed her a coin and said, is this valid currency? Should she accept it as payment? Rav Chiya looked at it, and he said yes. And it turned out the next day she said she took it to the bank, it was invalid, they wouldn't accept it. So that's called Din Garmei. He didn't do anything to her property, but he caused her a loss. So the Gemara ends up reaching the conclusion that Rav Chiya paid, even though he didn't have to. And the Gemara says he did look for the Mishra Sadin. Why? Again, if you read through the Gemara, in principle, you should be liable when you do damage to someone else. But the Torah has to draw a line always for various considerations of who will be exempt, even in situations where they somehow might have been involved in the damage. So was Rav Chiya technically exempt? Yes. But nonetheless, he felt that the right thing to do was to pay for a loss that he had caused. Okay. So that's the general pattern. There's one more Gemara I want to look at. It's a fascinating and powerful Gemara. It's the last Gemara in the sixth parak of Bava Metzia. It's in Bava Metzia, Daf Hei Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says the following. Rabba Bar Bar Chanon, Tvaru Leihanu Shakuloi Chavita Dechamra. Rabba Bar Chanon had these Shakuloi. They were carriers. They were schleppers. And they broke a barrel of wine. And the din is that when you are a hired worker in this context, you're a shomer sachar, and they would have been liable for damages. Shaka liglimayu, he took their shirts. You know, Mir Tzashem, you get married one day, if you're paying any attention to the ksuba as it's being read under the chuppah, so the chassan promises the kala that he'll pay the ksuba, afilu min glima da'al kasvai, even from the shirt off my back, everything that I have. So he took it literally. Shaka liglimayu, he seized their shirts. Asu, Amru l'Rav, they came and complained to Rav. Amar le'Rav said to Rabba Bar Chanan, Hav lehu glimayu, give them their shirts back. Amar le, he said to Rav, Dinachi, is this really the din? They caused Nezek, I seized their property as payment. I mean, they want to pay me money, I'll give them the shirts back. Really, I'm mechuyev to give them the shirts back and not take payment? So Rav said to him, Amar le, in, it is. But what does he do? He quotes a pasuk from Mishlei, "Leman teleich b'derech tovim," so that you should walk in the way of the good. Story's not over yet. That doesn't really sound like a din. That sounds like a nice—I wouldn't say nice advice. I mean, it's a very generic pasuk in Mishlei. Then the story continues. Amrodei, some would call this chutzpah. Ani anan, we're poor. V'tarachinan kuleyomai, we worked all day. V'kafinan, and we're hungry. V'les lamidi, we don't have anything to eat. Amrodei, he says to Rabbi Barchanan, zil hav agrayim. Go give them their agra, their reward, their schar. Go pay them their wages. I can't really imagine. Poor Rabbi Barchanan, it's like, 1 second. It's bad enough they didn't do the job. You want me to pay them for the job that they didn't do, and they damaged my property in the process? So Amar Lei, Dina Hachi, says the rabbi, that the Dina Amar Lei in. He says, yes, it is. And he quotes the second half of the Pasuk. If you are chos tzadikim tishmar, and the ways of the righteous you should guard or follow or watch. This is a very, very striking Gemara, because this does not really fit the pattern of all of the other Gemaras. All of the other Gemaras seem to be an extension of the spirit of the law. But this Gemara seems to be something totally different. One might even classify it under the rubric of some kind of, I don't want to say social justice, redistribution of the wealth, something like that, which normally we think of at least as a government function, as a community tzedakah function. Here, Rav was in effect imposing it upon Rabbi Barchana. There's another odd feature of this statement. Now, the Gemara here, by the way, does not say. The Gemara is, this is the only Gemara that doesn't quote this as lifnei mishur hadin. You notice that Rav quoted something totally else. It's pasuk for Mishlin. Man helech b'derech tovim v'orchos tzadikim tishmar. What is very, if I had to ask you, which do you think is more obligatory? Would you say it's the cases, the first two cases or three cases we looked at, or this? Which is more obligatory? I would say the first three cases. Right there, the spirit of the law is clearly with you having to do it, but technically exempt. Here, I mean, maybe Rav shouldn't take their shirt, Rav or Barchanan shouldn't take their shirts, but to have to pay them? Now, so the Gemara doesn't quote Lefnei Mishur HaSadin here, interestingly enough. But what is striking is, what did Rav or Barchanan ask Rav? What were his words? Dina hachi. Is this the din? And what did Rav say in response?
Yes.
It's really, really striking. There is a machlokas quoted by the Beis Yosef. For those of you who are not familiar, the Beis Yosef was Rabbi Yosef Karo's magnum opus. It's his main sefer Psach Halacha. The Shulchan Aruch are just the crib notes on the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef was a commentary written on the Torah, the Arba Turim of Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher. And in the Beis Yosef, it's the second to last source on the sheet. The Rabbi Yosef Karo writes as follows: Kasev Rabbeinu Yerucham b'shem Harosh in Kofen al Lefnei Mishur HaSadin u'Pashehu be'enan. That's what he quotes the Rosh saying. Mitzmehani amasha kasav Mordechai beperek sheni de metzia the kaifina lemevad lefnei mishur sadin. He wonders about Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham was a Talmud. The Mordechai and the Rosh were both Talmidim of the Maram Rittenberg. Rabbeinu Yerucham was a Talmud of the Rosh. He just wonders how the Mordechai could say that we are kaifina lefnei mishur sadin. And then he says, he says something very interesting here. He doesn't talk about chiyu. He says there is no mention of kfiyah. What is kfiyah?
Force.
In other words, based they may tell you that you're obligated to do something. Hopefully you do it. But there's a second stage after that, which is kofin. So he says there's no mention of kfiyah. It's true, but the Gemara does say, Rav says to him, is that the din? He says, yes. Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, Chayiv Lahatzir. In Shulchan Aruch, the Rama just writes, Ve'im based in Yechol Lochov Likanes Lefnei Mishur Sadin, Avo Pi Shinir Lahem Shehu Min Aroi. It's the bottom source on page 2. V'yesh Cholkim. The Rama quotes two deos, and the Achronim are divided on the issue as well. Can based in beat someone up, meaning engage whatever methods of force necessary in order to ensure compliance not only with din, but lifnei mishur hadin. Okay, so that remains a machlokas. Again, it's an astounding notion that Beis Din is kofin on lifnei mishur hadin, that anybody would say that. As the Beis Yosef does say correctly, utmehani, kind of wonder. But then again, you have to wonder about Rabbi Yochanan's statement that Yerushalayim was destroyed because people didn't do Lefnei Mishur HaSadin. We'll come back to that. I wanted to spend a few minutes, though, talking about two other concepts. One mentioned by the Ramban, and the other, what I would say, is a situation where everybody agrees that we are kofin on lefnei mishuras hadin. First, the topic of pshara. The Ramban, if you recall, the first source that we read, linked pshara and lefnei mishuras hadin. They both come from Basisa Hayashar Batov. Now, what is pshara? So, today, nobody does din. We don't have real dayanim. We don't have real rabbis. We're all fake rabbis. Our smicha is not real for all the controversy over who can and can't get smicha. So, we're all fake rabbis. Okay? We have this smicha, whatever it means, but it's not real smicha. So, therefore, we have no real dayanim. How dayanim work today is its own fascinating subject. But, and not as a result of that, but maybe connected to that, there is a concept of pshar. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a machlokas about this. What is ideal? There is a minority view that pshara is a terrible thing. When two people come to you for a din Torah, yikov hadin esahor, let the din, let truth and justice penetrate no matter how far it has to go, no matter how painful it is. Pshara is a bad thing. And yet, the Gemara then says, quotes many sources, that it's a mitzvah to make pshara. Meaning when people walk in and they come into a case of Din Torah, the first thing that Dayanim say to them is, do you want to do pshara or din? And Dayanim are to encourage them to do pshara. Pshara is kind of like, we would translate a compromise. But it's very important to think about what pshara means. Pshara isn't, okay, you owe me $100. We walk into Beis Din. Beis Din's going to make a pshara, you'll pay me $50. You owe me, you borrow $100, you owe me $100. What pshara means, we just cut the cake in half. So that's clearly not the case. If you look in the second source on the Roman numeral 3, which is from the Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah lomar lebalei dina betchila, hadin atem rotzim o apshara. Here's a mitzvah. We pass in to ask the balei din, what do you want to do? Im ratzu bepshara, osim b'neim pshara. If they agree to do pshara, we make pshara. Now here's a crucial law. Uchashem shemuzar shelo lahatos din, hadin, kach muzar shelo yate hapshara le'echad yoser mechaber. Just there is a warning against being mate hadin, distorting justice. There's also a prohibition. The dayans also warn not to be mate pshara in favor of one over the other. Now, as my Rebbe Rav Shechter likes to say, pshara doesn't mean you divide the cake in half. Sometimes pshara means one party gets all of the money, which might have been the same result as din. And clear proof to that is the notion that such a thing as hatayas din and pshara. What do you mean? How can be mata din and pshara? Pshara is just about making some kind of a compromise, dividing the cake in half. You know, then how can you be mata din? We aren't mata pshara. We understand. If there's a standard of justice, there's a standard of truth, there's a standard of law that has to be applied, you can't distort that standard because you like one of the Balei Dinim, you feel bad for one of the Balei Dinim. But pshara, what does it mean to be mata pshara? I think that the answer is that even pshara is a form of lefnei mishuras hadin. For example, I believe there's a rush who says somewhere that if you get into a fist fight with me and you haul off first and hit me, and I just instinctively slug you in return, that I am pater. Because it's a human instinct, it's not exactly self-defense, but it's a human instinct which you just can't expect the person to restrain themselves. Now, imagine the following. Imagine that you do something nasty to me, you humiliate me, whatever else, and I'm so angry, I walk out, and on my way out, I just kick the tires on your car, and I punt, and why do you wind up with a hole in there? Now, what's the din? The din is I'm chayav to pay. No question I'm chayav to pay. But so mitzara din, I'm a mazik. The fact that you embarrassed me, you did something, you were nasty to me, doesn't mean I have the right to damage your property. But one could imagine, in this debate, a dayan saying the following, look, mitzad hadin, what he did was awesome. But we do understand in a certain sense why he had a certain kind of tain against you. His tain did give him the right to smash your tires. But we understand enough a little bit that maybe he should only pay 75% of the tire damage. Right? Why would that be? Because again, Lifnim Mishur Sadin takes into account some of the factors that Din doesn't. Din says that Adam is Mu'ad Olam. Bein b'shogeg, bein b'meizid, bein b'ones, bein b'ratzon. It doesn't matter how I damage your property. If your crystal vase is sitting here, and I'm exhausted, I lie down and take a nap, and I'm out cold, and in my sleep I roll over on your vase, I'm chayv. We might call that, maybe it's b'shia, but even if we call that ones, it doesn't matter. I'm chayv to pay. But nonetheless, we can understand in certain circumstances that you kind of set it up a little bit also. You taunted me, you tortured me, now I go and I damage your property out of frustration. So you can understand why Beis Din, while in Din, that has no relevance, in the Lifnei Mishur Hadin, it's a factor that can be taken into account. That's what I think it means, that Pshara is Lifnei Mishur Hadin. It takes into consideration certain factors, certain considerations, which Din itself has chosen to dismiss. Now, there is one category of Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, which is enforceable. It's a concept that is, to me, very, very powerful, not because I think the case is so common, but because it makes a very loud statement. This is known as Dina de Bar Metzra, or Kofen al Midas Sadon. What does Dina de Bar Metzra mean? So the Rambam writes, V'lo od, this is Roman number 5. V'lo od, Ela hamocher karka shalo la'acher, yesh l'chaveiro shu b'tzad ha'meitzer shalo, liten damam l'lokeh u'l'saleh gosa. If I am selling a field, and you happen to own a field next to it, and I sell it to somebody who doesn't live near here or doesn't have a field near here, you can go, you who have this field right next to my field that I just sold, you can go to the buyer, you can take out your wallet, you can say you paid $100 for the field, here's $100, thank you very much for my field. He can give money, it's an unbelievable statement. You bought this field from Reuven, which was next to my field. Thank you so much for acting as my agent. It's like you're my shaliach. What's going on here? The answer is, the Rambam says, on the third line, halfway across, V'davar zeh mishum shenemar v'asisa hayashar v'atov, amru chachamim, hovel v'amechar echadu. Since the sale for Reuven, it doesn't matter whether I sold it to you or I sold it to Reuven. It makes no difference to me. It is more proper, it is fair, it is kinder, it is nicer that the person who has a field next door gets first dibs. The reason for that, by the way, it's an agricultural reason. If you have to hire animals and hire workers, having your fields in one place is much more economically efficient. If you don't have a field next to mine, next to this field that was just sold, so you go buy a field somewhere else. It makes no difference to you. You're going to have to schlep the workers and animals to one place or the other. But for me to buy this field, it makes a huge difference for me, and it comes at no cost to you. There are other fields to buy. This is a specific form of what the Rambam refers to, if you turn to the fourth sheet, of Kofen al Midas Sadon. The Rambam says, Ha'achim o ha'shutfim shabo lachlok es ha'sad ve'liko ko'echat ha'lka. If you have a pair of siblings or partners who are dividing up a field that they own jointly, if the quality of the field is uniform, it doesn't matter which half, but which side of the field I get, it's all of uniform quality. You divide up, if you want to know how you divide up a field fairly, if it's all of equal value, split in half. If the field is 100 by 50, give each person a 50 by 50. If one of the partners says, I have a field adjoining it on that side, I want that half of the field, we listen to him. We force the other partner to agree. To not let the guy have that half, that's called Midas Sadon. You know what Midas Sadon is? It's very, very contrary to popular American values today. Midas Sadom, the Mishnah Abba says is, Shali Shali Vishala Shalach. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. My property, I do whatever I want with it. The answer to Halacha says, no, that's not actually true. It's not actually true. It is your property, but you don't have the right to do anything you want with it when it's doing something that costs somebody else and is no benefit to you. That's Midas Sadom. Right? It's not Shali Shali Vishala Shalach. In effect, it's a reminder that everything belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So yes, we are guardians on this property that we have acquired, but the Ribbono Shel Olam retains certain rights. So this is the one exception to the rule. The partnership division is a kind of dina de bar mitzvah. A mitzvah is a boundary or a border. Dina de bar mitzvah means the halacha of the person who borders, who adjoins your property. So this is the one example where everybody agrees that kofin al midas sadom. Even if you believe that as a general rule, lifnei mishur sadin is not actionable, which as I said is a machlokes two days in the Ramah, it's a machlokes achrodim. Nonetheless, midas sadom is the one case we were actually kofin. Okay. Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk about is why lifnei mishur sadin is actually so important. Why is it so significant? I understand it's the nice thing to do. I understand that being a from Jew means you want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam in a super optimal way. Right? You don't want to do just the minimum. But when you're in a relationship with somebody, so, the ksuba, delineates obligations of husband to wife. Halacha has obligations of wife to husband. Right? But presumably, when you're engaged in a relationship, so you don't do just, if it's a relationship that's important to you, you don't do just the minimum. Right? A spouse, for another spouse, tries to do something that's beyond what is required. That's what the expression of genuine love is in a relationship. And we have the same relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. And presumably, when we do mitzvos, and when we engage in our daily lives, we want to show the Ribbono Shel Olam that it's not just, okay, yeah, this is my list of things, I'll do exactly what you told me I'm done. No, we want to demonstrate that our Avas Hashem, and we want to go beyond what is required. I understand that. But why is it that Lifnei Mishur Hadin is so powerful that Rabbi Yochanan would say that Yerushalayim was destroyed because people didn't do Lifnei Mishur Hadin? What exactly does that reflect? I want to suggest three things. The first is on the last comment I made about Midas Sadom. Sadom, for any of you who might happen to be doing Daf Yomi, or if you have family members who are doing Daf Yomi, on Thursday, the Daf Yomi will reach towards the end of Perek Chelek, where the Gemara tells the Sadom stories. Sodom stories are great stories. If you look at the Sodom stories, you understand what the problem with Midas Sodom is. Shali Shali V'Shalach Shalach, which is that it's very often couched in terms of justice. Shali Shali V'Shalach Shalach. But if you look at the din in Sodom, so you realize that that kind of attitude ultimately and very quickly leads to din sheker. The Gemara talks about the four kinds of judges they had in Sodom. Shakroi, liars, this judge, that judge, all a bunch of degenerates. And yet they couched everything that they did in terms of Shali Shali, Shalah Shalah. This beautiful, abundant land belongs to us. We're not going to share it with anybody else because it's ours. What ends up happening in a society like that is the failure to do Lifnei Mishur Hadin, the engaging in Midas Sadom ultimately leads to perversion of actual din. That's the first problem. The second is an even more fundamental flaw. And that is that it's a failure to recognize where our material goods come from. Moshe Rabbeinu warned us about this in Sefer Dvarim. Pen tochal v'sabata, v'atim tovim tivnevi yashavta. In Parshas Ekev, all of our property, we will have wonderful material success. And then, v'ram l'bavecha, your heart will become arrogant. And then, V'amar tabel v'avecha, kochi ve'otzem yodi asal le'asachal hazeh. You know why I'm so wealthy? Me. Because I worked hard, because I'm deserving, because I earned it. And I don't want to share that with anybody else. It's mine. What's mine is mine. And the answer is no. So there are a lot of people who work just as hard, but for whatever reasons, Ribbono Shel Olam didn't endow them with the same success. And thus, there's a fundamental failure to recognize that everything that we have, in every aspect of life, but in this particular case, monetarily, is actually something that comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a beautiful pasuk. It's actually cited in Pirkei Avos. But it's a shame that when we say Vayivarech David on Pesukei Dezimra, that we stop short to Pesukim. The story of Vayivarech David, if you wonder what it's about, what is David talking about? What prompted there? You have to learn Divrei Yamin. And David was concerned that they would be able to raise enough funds for the temple, for the Beis HaMikdash. And yet the Jews came forward, they just brought huge amounts of donations. And David was overwhelmed, and this was what Vayivarech David was about. And in there, he talks about Va'osher v'hakavod mufanecha, wealth and honor comes from you, everything. And a couple of psukim later, after we stop reading that part from the Yemen, David HaMelech says, Ki mimecha hakol umiyadcha nasanu lach. Everything is from you, and what we've given you, we've just given you yours. It's like we took money from the Ribbono Shel Olam's right pocket, and we put it in his left pocket. So Klal Yisrael, in the time of David HaMelech, they had acquired all these riches, but they understood that it really didn't belong to them. It was just the bikkurim given by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Torah writes in Hilchos Tzedaka, it's the second to last source on the last sheet. When a person is afraid, doesn't want to give tzedakah sufficiently, and the proper amount of tzedakah, the ideal amount of tzedakah is no more and no less than 20%. 10% is a midah beinonis. The Torah writes, Ha'oyala belibo eitz alomar, eich echsar mamoni, lit melaniyim. You shouldn't think, oh, you know, I don't want to reduce my bottom line. I don't want to empty my bank account, even partially lose a little bit to give the poor. I mean, they can't really be deserving. It must be their fault. A person has to realize that his money is not his. Rather, you're given a pikadon, a mashkon. You're given something to watch by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the story goes like this. If you're an executor for an estate, and the person who died said, distribute the money this way, that way, and the other way, give this to this charity, give this to this relative, you don't care. It's not your money. Right? You don't balk at it, because it's not coming out of your bottom line. So the Torah says you have to look at giving tzedakah the same way. The money that you have is really not yours. It's a pikadon from God. God said, do the following with my money. He was kind enough to allow us to enjoy 80% of the fruits. The other 20%, he said, to give to his children, the poor people. So a person who doesn't engage in the Shlemus Shur Sadin does so under the premise of Shalisha Li, but that fails to recognize that everything that we have in every department, in money, in intelligence, in any gifts that the Ribbono Shel Olam has endowed us, all of those things are a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam, not because we deserve it. Finally, and perhaps to me most powerfully, the failure to engage in the Shlemus Shur Sadin is a failure to look in the mirror. There's a Gemara in Brachos, which tells us something staggering. If the Gemara hadn't said it, we would call it heresy for it even being stated. Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosei, Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mispala. How do you know that the Ribbono Shel Olam prays? He davens. The Ribbono Shel Olam davens? My first question is, who is he davening to? The Gemara doesn't ask that question. But how do we know this? For Shenemar, Babi Osim El Har Kodshi, Simach Tim Beveis Tefilosi, Tefilos Samlo Nemar El Tefilosi, Mikan Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu Mispala. The Gemara now asked, "My Mitzale, what is God? What is his prayer?" Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia, Amar Rav, Yiratzel Milafanai Sheyich Beshurachmai Eskasi. May it be the will from before me, whatever that means, that my mercy should overcome my anger, v'yigolu rachamai al midosai, that my compassion should dominate over my midos, my sense of justice, v'esnaig imbanai b'midas rachamim, I should engage with my children, klal Yisrael, with the midas harachamim, v'ikanes lahem lefnei mishur sadeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's prayer is that he should engage in the Lefnim Meshuras Hadin with Klal Yisrael. The truth be told, when Yom HaNoraim rolls around, I doubt there's a single one of us who can look in the mirror and say, I'm perfect. I have no sins to confess. I'm a tzaddik. I'm a tzaddik gamor. I'm the exception to the pasuk in Koheles, ki adam ein tzaddik baretz asher yaseh tov la'echata. And therefore, Ribbono Shel Olam, judge me as I am. All of us are sinners, in one level or another. And when we come and ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for kapara on Yom Kippur, what we're really asking for is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu be mekayim this tefillah. That he spare us because we're human beings, because we're weak. Because as much as we try and struggle, we're weak human beings, we're basar v'dam. We ask for the Ribbono Shel Olam not to engage in din, because if he did, we would be goners. That would be it. It would be over. We'd all be dead on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, whatever it would be. But instead, we rely upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mercy. We rely upon his Lefnim Meshuras Hadin for our survival. And if that is the case, how dare we, in engaging with other people, say, no, Shali Shali V'Shalach Shalach, I'm not interested in Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. And that's why I think Yerushalayim was destroyed over that. Because if you can't engage in Lefnim Meshuras Hadin with other people, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to engage in Lefnim Meshuras Hadin with you either. As we say, treat others as you expect to be treated or hope to be treated. And that is the third reason, and final reason, why I think Lefnim Meshuras Hadin is so central. That if we, the failure to engage in Lefnim Meshuras Hadin is the ultimate act of gaiva. It's the failure to recognize that we are fallible and weak human beings, and we rely upon a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Mrachamim and his Lefnim Meshuras Hadin for our continued existence and survival. And therefore, it is obligatory upon us, even if it's not enforceable in a court, to engage in dealing with other people, Lefnim Meshuras Hadin.